When weapons inspectors left Iraq in 1998 after 7 years in the country, they did so to mixed reactions about what their work had accomplished. Generally, inspectors seemed to think that the presence of inspectors had discouraged Iraq from using any weapons of mass destruction, if not from procuring them or making more of them. Past weapons inspectors have had a variety of points of view about what such inspections might accomplish now and how best to go about them. David Kaye is a former chief weapons inspector who was in Iraq in the early 90s. And David Albright is a physicist who worked in the Iraqi inspections program in 1996. Thanks, both of you, for joining us.
Happy to be with you.
Good to be here.
Mr. Kaye, what do you think of Iraq's reversal and allowing weapons inspectors in? Weapons inspectors are going to be seen as perhaps making a bit of a difference now.
Well, I think there's no surprise as to what they've done. It's what we used to call a cheat-and-retreat strategy. That is, when the prospect of military action or strong Security Council action became very serious, they would become welcoming to inspectors, knowing that pretty soon that pressure would disappear and they could start restricting inspections again. We have a lot of history from 91 to 98 of exactly that happening. I think they did what was predicted.
Mr. Albright, is the scenario different now? Is there more of a threat of force?
I think there's more of an agreement that this really is Iraq's last chance. And if they continue a strategy, as David outlined, it will quickly realize that they're not cooperating. And then there needs to be an enforcement action. And I think the international community is moving to that point. Certainly the United States is there.
What's the best case scenario for weapons inspectors? What can really be achieved here in terms of, say, plutonium detection, Mr. Kaye?
Well, I think there are two sorts of cases. One, Saddam is still in power or Saddam is gone. As long as Saddam is there, the best inspectors can do is slow a program down, make it more expensive, force the Iraqis to really conceal the program more. It's very difficult if you're talking about small amounts of nuclear material or small amounts of biological or chemical material to believe inspectors can find it when the government is still trying to conceal it.
Mr. Albright?
I would say they can do more. I mean, particularly in the nuclear side, the techniques that were being developed in 97 and 98, we're going to be able to do a much better job at detecting smaller scale indigenous efforts and having some chance of detecting what we call a weaponization effort.
And how do those tools give weapons inspectors more ability?
For example, technologies were being deployed to do environmental monitoring much more effectively. Traditionally, you go into a site, you take a swipe, for example, and then you analyze it and look for minute traces of nuclear material. They were starting to be deployed in a wide area. There was also a greater recognition of the challenges and what needs to be done. And so I think people had learned, basically from mistakes, of how do you go about trying to gain greater assurance that there's an absence of undeclared or secret nuclear activities.
David's absolutely right. The techniques improved tremendously from 91 to 98. The problem is, so did the Iraqi capability at deception. We've now had 4 years of no inspection. We just don't know how much better they are now.
Where would you think that an inspector would begin to look?
You would hope there was some intelligence. I would try to go to the presidential sites, the other sites where they denied us access in the past.
To Basra, to Kirkuk.
To Basra, Kirkuk, some areas around Tikrit, where the Iraqis have a lot of their programs for various disciplines centered.
Saddam Hussein's hometown.
It's right.
There's another thing that needs to be done. There needs to be more of a focus on the nuclear scientists and technicians. One of the mistakes that was made in the 90s was that whenever inspectors interviewed the nuclear scientists, most of the time there was an Iraqi minder there, and sometimes there were video crews. And so I think it's very important to step back from that and just say, look, inspectors interview Iraqis alone, without minders, and if necessary, they would have the right to remove senior Iraqi officials or scientists from the country to interview. And if you can do that, you can start looking for inconsistencies, and you can start looking for people who are actually willing to pass real information. But I think the bottom line is that the inspectors are going to have to be very aggressive and creative when they go in there.
Is it harder to detect for chemical and biological weapons than for nuclear weapons?
Well, it's not harder if you're actually right up against the weapon. What is very hard to detect is the production process. Because the chemical process that you use for nerve gas is the same one you use for pesticide production. Biological is fermentation, and it's very difficult unless you're up close to the process while it's actually being run, and that is the challenge. But let me just say, I agree completely with David. We did a lousy job of pulling out the technical people. We allowed the Iraqis to control it. I think a number of us feel we'd been better off if we'd been equipped with green cards to offer the Iraqi scientist asylum in the United States and a career that had a lot of possibilities. We would have pulled them out, we would have learned more, and they wouldn't be in the program today.
Well, David Kaye and David Albright, thank you both very much for joining me.
Thank you, Jackie.
David Kaye is director of the Center for Counterterrorism at Science Applications International Corporation, and David Albright, now president of the Institute for Science and International Security. Both men are former weapons inspectors in Iraq.